The Europe Report with Kanan Lipschitz.
Kanan, it feels like it's been a really long time. Great to speak to you again. How are you?
Good, thank you. Drier than you are.
I'm not so sure about that. Are you in Israel or are you in Europe?
In Israel, we're hit by a storm.
Yeah, we've heard. 8 degrees in Modi'in apparently. In any event, Kanan, there's really been some interesting developments. I think most specifically with the Jewish community in the Ukraine. Talk to us about what they must be feeling now in the midst of all this tension.
Well, as the Russian troops are amassing along the border with Ukraine and Belarus, the tension is escalating at a special time for all the Jews of that area, Russian and Ukrainian and Belarusian, because the January 27th anniversary, that's the day that Auschwitz was liberated. It's the International Holocaust Remembrance Day for many countries, but in the East it has a particular significance because those were Soviet troops that liberated the camp. And when I say Soviet, I mean Ukrainian, I mean Russian, and the prisoners inside were also of that mixed ancestry. So it comes at a very symbolic time, and for that complicated relationship that Ukraine has with Russia, and in the Jewish community, there's also doubts that are reminiscent of the questions that Jews back then faced, because a Russian invasion into Ukraine in the current climate is not going to be pretty. And there's the constant question of what do we do? Do we pack up and go? Do we prepare ahead of the storm? Do we hope that we can weather it? And those are, yeah, it all looks fine. Kiev is under a beautiful coat of snow right now, but it could all capsize in a moment. As we know from history, the tension between Russia and Ukraine has really stoked Ukrainian nationalism. And that, of course, is never good news for the Jewish minority. Then the manner in which Russian troops might go into Ukraine won't be very gentle either. So there's all these questions. People I spoke to were really thinking back into their family histories. I'm talking about Alexander Duchovny, the chief reform rabbi of Ukraine, who says, yeah, I'm thinking about my mom. She left. Her entire family decided, it's going to be okay. We can do this. We'll weather the storm. They all died. What do I do? And he's with one hand on just daily life and preparing for that ceremony, January 27th, and with the other, with a passport in hand, ready to go into what he considers another homeland, Israel.
Fascinating that. I mean, I think there have been reports this week that the Israeli government thinking of airlifting Ukrainian Jews to Israel. We're very removed from the situation. I don't think we know the Ukrainian community very well at all. Kanan, help me understand. This whole issue arose because of certain separatists in the Ukraine supporting the Russians. To what extent, where does the Jewish community lie? Are they fiercely loyal to Ukraine? Are there an element of them who are loyal to Russia? How does this community, where does it fit into the picture?
You say that Ukrainian Jews are holier than the Pope when it comes to nationalism. There's genuine patriotism among them. And that's also for historic reasons, because Russian oppression in Ukraine has not been kind to the Jews of that country either. So they share those painful memories from the past. Stalinism was, of course, notoriously anti-Semitic. Those are the bitter memories. On the other hand, the Russian Jews are just as committed to the narrative of their government, that Ukraine is a collaborating nation that collaborated with Nazi Germany, that is inherently anti-Semitic. So there's a total buy-in of the government narrative and the broader social narrative in both places.
Fascinating. We no doubt will keep our fingers on the pulse and watch developments there. Also incredibly interesting is a French parliamentary report. I didn't know about this. Apparently being delivered on Sarah Halimi. Tell us about that story.
Sarah Halimi is often, the case of Sarah Halimi is often referred to as the second Dreyfus affair. That's the level of significance that it has right now for the French Jewish minority. It's the story of a woman who in 2017, her Muslim neighbor came into her home, pummeled her to death as she cried for at least 14 minutes for help. Police were on the scene. They didn't enter the apartment for some reason, although they had keys. And then, worst of all, the offender, the self-professed killer, walks without trial. Doesn't really walk. He's put in a psychiatric hospital, but he's not tried. And the reason is he smoked too much weed, and that triggered a psychotic episode in him. Well, that decision triggered a psychotic episode in French jury for the first time in April. 20,000 of them gathered in Place Trocadéro in Paris to protest not against anti-Semitism, as is usual, but against the government, the government's handling of the affair. And we have to understand that in the eyes of French jury, the government has been the main ally and vehicle for defeating anti-Semitism. It was a deeply traumatic moment. It was the moment that French Jews, for the first time, I was there at the mass rally, that I heard leaders saying, I don't know what I should tell you. I've kept telling you that we will get through this. We will push through this. We will persevere if we don't cede our place in society. And I'm not sure that's true anymore. Really defeatist, really, really troubling signs of a breaking point. And against this background, against all these questions about the trial and the actual murder, why didn't police go in? Why was he allowed to pummel her to death and then throw her to her death from the third floor of her Paris apartment? Well, a bunch of parties got together and they made a, you know, parliamentary committee of inquiry, which filed its final report. That was supposed to be a healing moment and the answering of so many questions. Instead, it erupted into disarray with the president of the community, who's a Jewish guy, very active in the Jewish community, Meir Habib, calling the entire committee a sham. There were also cynical observations by the rapporteur, the woman lawmaker tasked with actually investigating the affair. She said, well, when I look at the Kobili Traoré, the killer, and when I look at the state of Halimi's body, I don't think she cried a lot.
Oh,
I don't think she
sake.
Shouted so much. So oh, very, very, sake. Very callous, very cynical. This moment of supposed answering of questions just brought a new wave of questions and just reawakened and reopened that wound.
Incredibly reminiscent of the Dreyfus affair. No wonder the comparisons are being made. Kanaan Lipschitz, as always, thank you for talking to us on Chai FM. It's great to have you back.